Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rap room. Tongues won't be bit. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We here to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random.
We get to win.
I hope that you ready. We entering in the zone soon. We on a grown shit. Welcome to the rap room.
That's it. That's all I got to say.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it street, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what?
2015.
Yeah, we got a chorus going on here today. That's what I'm talking
That's
about.
Right.
So check it out, y'all. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft. What do we say? Shit like that.
Yes, that's what you said.
Why you gotta be all behind me?
No, I said that's you. I am the wind beneath your wings.
If you were the wind beneath my wing, you would have said shit like that with me.
I'm sorry, I missed my cue. Sorry.
You see what I'm talking about, Dennis?
I know. I don't know how you put up with it. Either of you.
Exactly.
The insolence.
So y'all hear her voice. That's my girl, Lisa Bulacaja.
Mm-hmm.
We call her the Street Nerdist. Mm-hmm. Why we call you that?
I have no idea.
You.
Just messing with you.
Okay.
I am so messing with
you.
Can
somebody hand me that knife over there? I'm gonna stick this bitch right here.
No, because I can come from an academic place, or I can come to you just real on the street, you know, with Pookie and them, and bring it to you
can
that
you
way.
Can you bring Pookie over here today?
And Big Mike, you know what's really sad? I really do know a Pookie and a Big Mike and them. When I say
I
that,
I
know.
I do too.
I think everybody knows a Big Mike and a Pookie.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah,
I don't.
Know. You don't?
Could I borrow yours? Kind of I'll borrow your Pookie thing. And your Big Mike.
He on Crenshaw right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's Lisa Bulacaja, y'all.
Hello, everybody.
So look, if you're grown, let's get it in.
Buckle up.
So check it out, you guys. We are recording live today. Back again, in effect.
Mm-hmm.
At the picket, in effect.
Mm-hmm. He's stupid.
Live today at the Hatchery Press over here in Larchmont in Hollywood.
Lovely facilities.
You guys,
you must
such
come
a
here.
Great little place. I got to bring my girl on again just to give you guys the little 411, let you know, hun. You
okay.
know what the joint is.
Oh my
Come
God.
On in here, Talia.
All of our
Tell them what the place is like now.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Talia, and I'm bringing you the 411 about the Hatchery. Essentially, it's a workplace for writers. We provide you with everything you need to get away from the distractions of home or coffee shops, and a place where you can be productive, focused, and creative amongst your peers. It's only for writers, and we provide 24/7 access to everything you need to get your work done. So there's Wi-Fi throughout the space, free tea and coffee, a fully stocked communal kitchen, free printing, as long as you're chill about it, and a library room full of libraries you can take home with you, and also a reference library with books on the craft, writing prompts, that kind of thing. It's divided into different areas, so you can find a place that really suits you. We've got a library room that's silent, the conference room that we're in right now, which we have for classes, which are mostly free, and podcasts, which are fantastic. And we're based out of Larchmont, which is amazing, and it's a walking distance from here, and it's full of really great local cafes and restaurants and like 12 yoga studios.
Yes.
I don't even know. And we're also really dedicated to community. We think that it's important. So we're really trying to help writers connect with each other and learn from each other. We hold lots of social events like game nights, classes, readings,
game night.
Podcasts. Loads of people are wanting to podcast, by the way, since you guys came in.
What?
Apparently, the
copycatters.
Yeah. All kinds. Member brunches and movie nights that Rotten Tomatoes are now coming to, which I'm super pumped about.
Yes, Rotten Tomatoes.
So if any of this interests you, go ahead and drop by for a free trial day or just a tour. We're always around, and we would love to meet you.
You guys have a website?
We have a website. It's www.thehatcherypress.com, and we're on Twitter at Hatchery Press, and Instagram also Hatchery Press.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much, guys.
They have a lovely patio upstairs for those of you who like to be outside. There's like umbrellas.
View.
There's a view. You can sit there. It's like the most peaceful spot. I have moved in. They don't know this yet. When Talia shuts up at night, I come creeping back here 11 o'clock with
Talia,
my bedroll.
Sometimes her Wonder Twin powers activate, and she turns into a form of a superfly.
Okay.
And she comes buzzing in here, and she sleeps in here. Y'all don't know it, though.
But what I love is that they have so many great resources, and they have lovely hand lotion in the bathroom, too, and it's wonderful. Like, you know what?
That stuff counts.
I know it sounds petty, but what I always learned years ago, it goes. Like, you go into the bathroom and you see what the bathroom looks like. Mm-hmm. Is it nice? Is it comforting? Do you feel like, yes, I can use a restroom here and it's lovely. And they've got like nice
That's
hand
important.
Soap.
That's
and
important.
It's clean and it's wonderful and it's bright and it's gorgeous. And it's like, this is a really wonderful space.
I just yeah. cleaned the bathroom.
You know what? You know what? And that, trust me, I'm telling you right now, go to any facility and go in their bathroom. If you feel comfortable in the bathroom, usually it's a sign you're going to be comfortable in the space.
Exactly.
And once again, lovely hand lotions.
So let's get into the show, y'all. So we got my man here today, my home team from way back. We've known each other for a while.
For a while. I love that you called me my man. I was really like, I'm hoping he calls me my man. Because I find that endearing. It means I'm touched, frankly.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah.
good. But no, we go back.
You don't call everyone my man, right?
If it's a girl, I wouldn't say it. But
yeah, okay.
Most dudes in here, I call my man.
All right.
It is a term
special,
of endearment.
It is, totally.
Not everybody gets that.
No, okay. not everybody gets it. All so right. We got my man here, you guys. Writer, director. You produce a lot of stuff, too.
I do produce some things, yes.
Mm-hmm. Host. I'm sure I'm forgetting 5 or 10 other things.
I've done journalism. Mm-hmm. I've done radio. I've mm-hmm. done, you know, whatever. I've kind of had to go wherever the check is. So I've done a fair amount of different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's my man, Dennis Hensley, you guys. Y'all should stand up. Praise him like he God or something. No, I'm kidding. but my man Dennis Hensley, we've known each other for a while. We go way back. So let's get into you a little bit.
All right.
Let's tell the people.
All right.
What you been up to?
What have I been up to?
Yeah.
Well, this week I had something kind of cool come out. My first ebook. My foray into ebookness.
Oh wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Ebookness.
It's actually a mini ebook. It's not a full on ebook.
Okay.
But it's called Mariner's Club Mixtape, and it's part of a travel compilation of 6. So they wanted something travel related.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse me. In my early 20s, I worked as a dancer on cruise ships. And
oh
it
God,
was a magical
so
time.
Fun.
I'm telling you.
The 80s and 90s.
Oh, my God.
That's when I was on tour. I know what you're talking about.
Right? And we had to do crew staff duties as well. So it was a very intense job, but I got to travel the world. I did it for 5 years. I was singing and dancing, you know, going everywhere, meeting all these cool people. So I said I wanted to write about that time in my life, but there was so much. So I was like, how do I focus this? So I decided what I would do is I would pick certain pop songs that remind me of stories from that era.
Oh, cute.
And list the song and then tell the story like a mixtape.
Oh, nice.
So that's why it's called Mariner's Club Mixtape.
Nice.
I pick 5 songs and tell the stories from my cruise ship days.
Is it a comedy?
He is silly. I was a little. It's one of those things where I was approached like a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
They needed the copy like 2 weeks later.
Oh my God.
I didn't have time to think about it. So it's a little raw. I hope it's funny, but I was kind of honest. And then it's one of those things where you turn it in on Friday, you get to look at it one time on Monday, and then it's on the
list. It's up there.
So
it's done.
Over the weekend, I was like, gosh, I talk about affairs. I talk about some sexual stuff. I don't know. It's
too late now.
It's not
too
edgy.
Late. It's out there.
And then at the weekend, I thought, you know what? You told the truth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you tell the truth, you got a shot at connecting with somebody. So I didn't worry too much about, things that I put in there that might be like
offensive or something.
Or just honest or like, wow.
Did you change the names to protect the innocent?
I changed the names of some people.
Okay.
I kept the names of...
The people that you hated, like, I want
well,
them to know. This bitch.
Exactly.
I kept the names of the people that come off, you know, not that I trash anybody, but, like, you know, I talk about the first guy I was ever with, this busboy from Mexico, and I changed his name because I don't know, you know, where he is or what he's doing. I found him on Facebook and friended him, and he hasn't accepted my friend request. his wall is all religious imagery.
Oh, really?
I'm like, he might not be gay anymore.
Okay, got it.
You know, it's all crucifixions and Pope
quotes. So now the audience knows he's gay. Duh.
I know. Well, I thought, I don't know. Yeah. But so it was cool. It happened really fast, and now it's out on Kindle and Amazon.
That's cool.
And it's called Mariner's Club Mixtape.
I think I have my Kindle right here.
I may have to
like download it right now.
You can't even get a coffee.
Are you kidding me? $2.99?
Yeah, it's a mini ebook. It's not okay. It's not that long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little fast read. You can read it.
You can read it in the average.
Well, what are the songs? Can you tell us the song? Do you want us to wait till we get the book? Can you tell us the songs?
There are five, and some of them are kind of random. But they're you know a song, and it's linked to a story. You can't change it. That's the song. There was a song by Jody Watley and George Michael called "Learn to Say No."
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a big hit, but it was like their duet, and that was a one-night stand I had in Hong Kong. That was like, should have been really fun and sexy, and I wasn't there yet. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, something disastrous happened, and that's what that song reminds me of.
Why is this a movie? I feel like this is a movie right now.
Well, Dennis is known for changing shit that's real into a movie, though. That's
movie material.
Well, the funny thing is, I just wrote finished a pilot about those days called Escapade.
Oh, okay.
Because that's going to be the name of the ship, and everyone's there to escape something, see where we're going.
Yeah.
And, I'd been working on it a long, long time, and it was kind of... Do you ever do this? Do you ever have readings with actors, and you learn a lot, and then you're like, oh shit, this is a mess.
Yes.
It was like, oh boy.
I didn't write that part.
Sorry. I know. Wow. That seems so much better in my head. But I did one of those, and then I learned a lot, so I had to go back in and sort of do it. But now I feel like it's presentable, and I just sent it to a production company that was interested in that world. So I hope they like it. We'll see.
All right.
You know, you're just throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall.
I mean, I was telling Lisa, I don't know if I told you, I have this one horror script that I wrote 3 or 4 years ago, and like every year it's optioned by a new company. Every year it's been optioned by a new
company. Is this mutilated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now...
That's fantastic.
Digger wants to option it.
Oh, Digger,
and then
get it,
I still
it,
have it. Another option with another, but it's an open option, so I can sell it if I want
to. Right, right.
And so it's just one of those things where things don't die until they freaking die.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Sometimes it's not the right time or, you know, the window.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. But that, I love that time in my life, and I always wanted to write about it. And what were the other songs? A Madonna song, of course, because I was all about that.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute. Okay. That's going to be the shit. He did this cute movie. What's it called? Took a Holiday?
If We Took a Holiday,
It is so... Oh, okay. You would love it.
I will send you the link.
Okay.
You can watch
it. Well, here, just tell them about it.
It's a short film that I made with my friends Nadia Ginsberg, a great actress who does a spot-on Madonna impersonation.
She's so good.
And Glenn Gaylord, who's a good friend of mine, filmmaker, writer, director, he directed it. And I'm in it with Nadia. And the premise is my character just got dumped by his boyfriend. It's his birthday, and he's got the blues.
Mm-hmm.
So as a present, his actress friend Nadia is going to pretend to be Madonna all day. So he gets to live out his fantasy and make friends with Madonna.
They have dance numbers, and it is so cute.
Yeah, they go, we could go to there's a dance number at a taco truck. And
nice.
We go shopping with Madonna, and you go exercising. And when you see her impression, you're like, oh, I get it now. Like, she's so great. Mm-hmm. So,
and she doesn't really play her totally on the nose, Madonna. She kind of plays, she plays a caricature, but she still rides a line of playing her straight too sometimes, which I like.
What I love about her impersonation is that she gets Madonna's insecurity, like her need to be thought of as smart and her need to sort of control. Like, she gets her psychology, and that's what makes it really fun.
Mm-hmm. And where's that at right now? That's doing really
well. It's playing the festival circuit. It's going to be in Toronto Inside Out Gay Film Festival on May 24th.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was fun.
But they've been in a lot of festivals, so it's done really well.
Thank you.
So let's back up a little bit, since we're talking about a little bit of your past.
Yes.
Let's just tell the kids where you're from and how you got to the game.
I grew up in a little town in Arizona. Mm-hmm. My family was all like hunting and fishing kind of guys, and I was like, no, entertainment. Like, if my family was Family Feud, they would do really well on the question.
That's funny.
Name an animal that's fun to kill. They would have a lot of answers. But I wasn't that dude. So.
He was like, ooh, Guys and Dolls is on TV.
I know. I was like Charlie's Angels.
Right.
I wanted to be a kid from fame.
Yes.
We all do.
You know, morning is music and afternoon's dance, and then there's the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Arizona State University, studied broadcasting, but I was mostly doing shows. That was where my heart was.
I got to back up.
Yeah.
You grew up Mormon.
I did. I was raised Mormon.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that? That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my father wasn't Mormon, so it wasn't super... we weren't
religious,
super strict about it.
It was
I did go to church.
It was a mixed marriage.
Yes. I did go to church, and... But there were rites of passage that all the Mormon boys my age did that I didn't do. Like, they all played Little League. Mm-hmm. I didn't play Little League. They all got their Eagle Scout. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite get it. Mm-hmm. They all went on missions for the Mormon church. I'm going to go dance somewhere or something.
There were no dance missions you could go on.
I know.
Like. I know.
They call those rave
parties. Broaden the horizons,
right?
You know?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be
just
awesome.
Open the door and somebody's dancing. Exactly. I would invite them in. I sort of quit going to church when the rest of my life got too interesting. That's kind of the way I thought of it. But I have a lot of affection for the people. They were really kind people. Mm-hmm. The doctrine, I don't know. But what's weird is they went years, they track you down, you know, and not in a kind of creepy way, but they just check on you. And one day they came knocking on the door and, hey, how are you? And I was like, I'm doing all right. And they kept coming back. And one day I was like, look, I'm here with my boyfriend. I'm gay. That's the deal. And the bishop happened to be one of the people that came to the door. So that's the leader of that particular area.
Okay.
And he was not having it.
Really?
And he sent me some literature.
There, huh?
He sent me some literature about homosexuality.
How many years has it been since they even contacted you? I mean,
this would have been in like 2007 or something.
Okay, that's
and
a long time.
So long story short, like, he would not let up on it. And I was like, this is not going to change. What are my options? Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, you can write a letter asking to be taken off the church rolls. And I was like, what's the address? And I got my Hannah
Montana. Here's a stamp. Can you put that on your way out?
I got out my Hannah Montana stationery. There are a lot of much more sort of visible gay people that are probably still in the church, but that particular bishop was not having it.
Interesting.
So there you go. Yeah, that's
I was just curious about that. I didn't mean to sidetrack you there.
No, it's fine. But, it's good. Yeah.
All right. So then you went to university?
I went to Arizona State, which is now like kind of like a joke school in movies. Have you noticed that? Like, that's like a punchline. Mm-hmm. I guess you can get a degree on your phone at this point.
My partner Scott went to Arizona State.
He went to Arizona State? I know, because you said in a past podcast that you spent some time in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Then I came out here to do a musical theater workshop, and I got the job on the cruise ship like a year later. Okay. And the way I got writing going is during one of my breaks from the cruise ship time, I went to an audition for Madonna's Blonde Ambition Tour. It all comes back to Madonna. I didn't want to gay out that much, but let's face it, it's happening. So I went to an audition for the Blonde Ambition Tour. Mm-hmm. And
What year was the Blonde Ambition Tour?
1990.
Yeah, 1990.
Yeah. That was like the best, that tour. And I did not get it, but she was there.
She ended up picking the best dancers in the world.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
all
tough.
Of them. Kevin Stay and all
that. Yeah. They were all awesome. Slam, remember how hot he was? Wow. And
my friend Gabriel was one of them.
Yes, dreamy. Mm-hmm. but I wrote a story about it called Confessions of a Boy Toy Wannabe about my fantasies about how we'd become best friends. And it was tongue-in-cheek, but it was still like my daydreams about it. And then I wrote about actually auditioning, and I sent query letters to all these magazines saying about this story. And Ed Margulies at Movie Line magazine called me up, and he said, if your story's as funny as your letter, I think we're in business.
Really?
And I sent in the story, and he's like, we're gonna run it. And he paid me $300.
Nice.
They ran it, and then he started giving me assignments. My first interview was Florence Henderson, and I built up it from that. From selling that first story, it was like a few years before I was making my living full-time writing for magazines, which was fantastic.
That's in your league over there.
I love that stuff.
But then magazines kind of dried up. It got really hard. You know, that was my bread and butter.
Oh, my God. I used to read that was my thing. I would go out to the big old bookstore. They had all the magazines stuff, and I would go every month and go buy up every, like, that was a dream. Like Premiere magazine, all those movie magazines, music. I mean, all of that stuff. Like, that was like the dream. Like, one day I can write for it. It's, you know, it just seemed perfect. And then all of a sudden, technology,
man.
But you know what? We kind of still do the same thing now. We just kind of do it online. It's just,
people are still writing about those things. Right. It's just not as lucrative for
and it's not as fabulous as it used to be when you have that brand new Chris magazine, you open it up and the smell of it. And what was the one that was like ginormous? It was one of my favorite ones. I think
was it Detour?
Not Detour. There's another
one. I wrote for Detour a lot.
Was it Interview? Not Interview.
Interview.
Magazine.
Interview. Giant.
It was. It used to be big.
Yeah. Interview. No, Interview.
Was Interview. It was like a big, and then they started slowly shrinking it. And I knew it was the end because I just love those big magazines and just those fantastic stories.
I still get Time magazine, and yesterday it showed up, and it's like a pamphlet.
Yes.
Like it's just like what's.
Yes.
It bums me out. But that was my bread and butter for years, magazines.
Wow.
And then
sounds like a good place to really learn craft. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, the thing about magazines in terms of being a writer, and you write short stories and like when you turn it in, you have to assume that's what's going to go out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might edit it, but it's not like sometimes with television or some of my other jobs where there's a process and there's a team.
Right.
You're kind of like, well, I always write CBB next to a line,
right.
like could be better.
Yeah.
Like if you have a script, it's like CBB. Like, and so.
That's funny.
When you do an article, you don't want any CBBs. You want it to
right.
be as good as it can be. So
sure.
I think that's good discipline. I've collaborated with people who are more likely to, like, I don't know, not correct a typo or whatever.
Right.
And I'm used to, like, no, this is going somewhere.
Right.
So I think that's
somebody's
going to
read this.
Yes.
That's kind of like.
And they will judge that.
So I think that's good training because you sort of assume that everything you write is going to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But and then I wrote for a magazine called Detour for a number of years, and I wrote for free at first.
Really?
Yeah, because they were this big magazine, and they'd be like, "Yeah, we want you to write, but it's free." But they were huge profiles on people like Rosie O'Donnell and Carrie Fisher, and so I did it. And when they finally got some money, they gave me a fiction column called Misadventures in the 213.
Oh, yeah. Love that title, too.
Right? And that became my first novel in 98.
Really?
Yeah. And that was a really exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had another novel come out in 2002 called Screening Party about a group of friends who watch movies together. So I tend to write a lot about friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody, we talk about all the time. Everybody has themes.
Yes, they have
that's my thing,
right.
I think.
Right.
What's yours?
Well, I don't know. My thing is always like the outsider, an insider who becomes an outsider who comes back in and becomes part of the group again.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that liminal space kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, mine is underdog. It's always underdog stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It could be a zombie movie. It's always something about the underdog.
Yeah.
Whatever
I
the
love
hell
that.
It is.
Yeah.
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 Always.
What's the thing that makes you cry in movies? Because friend stuff will make me cry before.
That's a good question.
Before. Like romantic stuff, or before, even sometimes family stuff. Like Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I'm a goner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. For me, it's, I guess when people have a self-realization that who they are is enough. Like when I see the, like, even Hallmark commercials, when someone, like, there was the one recently where the girl was playing a song for her grandma, her grandmother was singing the song.
Oh, yeah, so cute.
And, like, just to let her mom, grandma, you were, like, the most awesome, and then she does that for her and kind of reconnects, like, stuff like that just really touches me when you realize you are awesome the way you are. And anytime I see that in a movie, I'm just like, I'm a hot mess. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just like, oh, I wish everyone can have that moment.
I like moments when people, I guess it's similar to where you're going. Yours almost sounds to me like when they finally, in the movie, like when they have that arc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mine is when they have that moment when they find where the kid who's being bullied finally fights back.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. You
right?
know, that's that underdog guy that I like.
Were you
guy.
That kid growing up?
Yeah, I was bullied when I was a kid, and then I finally learned martial arts when I was younger and whipped the guy's butt.
Yeah. Did you?
So I have a thing. Yeah,
right.
I was interviewed on the McBetancourt show,
right?
And I talk about it in depth about being bullied for years and joining a gang, and I was part of the gang, and then I learned this martial arts thing and ended up beating this dude's butt, and he ended up joining our gang later on and becoming a really bad gang member years later.
Where did you grow up?
Palo Alto. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On the east side, though. And but I always talk about how I'm one of those people, I don't have a lot of pity for people who are bullied, and I don't mean this in a mean way. It's more so because I was bullied, I know what worked for me.
Right.
And what worked for me was to learn how to fight.
Right.
You know, especially being a gay dude, being a little pretty, being whatever. I was like, okay, I got to be able to. I'm growing up in a hood where everybody's banging, and you cannot
get away
with it.
Was that their bullying? Was that what they bullied you for?
No, they just bullied because we were new to the neighborhood.
Right.
We talked white. You know, which is not
ass.
Cool.
And you know what? And
I probably was a smart ass.
Too. You know what? And I got that a lot too as a kid. It's like, what do you mean I'm talking white? I am speaking standard English. I can switch up if I need to, an African American vernacular English if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
But what is this thing? But it was just, you just have to deal with people, especially when you come from like lower income areas where life is just tough anyway, and mm-hmm. anything that's different or weird or just strange, people just they can't handle it, and so they react to that kind of stuff. Sure. So I would get that all the time too, and I was just like, I don't understand.
Well, I wouldn't say anything, so everybody just assumed that right. I was the weak one, right. you know, and then. Years later, I figured out how to protect myself.
Which mm-hmm. martial art?
I
mean? Which,
I did Taekwondo.
Right on.
I did it off and on for like 9 years.
Oh, you went know? That? You went the physical route. I went the, luckily for me, around the corner in the apartment building that I lived next door to, I actually lived next to a drag queen.
Okay.
And I learned the art of the read. I wasn't the physical type. I can whip ass if I need to. Now I know I can't, okay. but it was like I learned the
That's
art.
That's where you got your mouthpiece from.
I'm telling you, I learned the art of the read. And That's I just remember funny. Just like, I was the type that would just cry in a minute. Like you say something wrong, it's like, "That's not..." Start crying, like my face would just be like, because I just didn't have, like, I knew I couldn't beat anybody up because I was so skinny. And it was just like, they just don't understand. And it was like, honey. That's funny.
Do you remember the first time you read somebody?
Yes. And there was great joy.
You're like, nailed it.
And it was because I used, exactly. I remember the word, I think it was something silly because the girl, something happened and I was correcting somebody for something, not being mean, but just saying, that's not, you know, that's, and the girl hit my, I had a bag of Doritos
mm-hmm.
and a pack of Nalators mm-hmm. in my hand. And I was saying something, she's like, you just talking like all the time. And she knocked my Doritos out of my hand and my, luckily, you know, my now and laters were wrapped up in paper, so they think mm-hmm. those could be saved. And I remember I sat there, and I remember our neighbor, he was sitting there, and he was just like waiting, like,
mm-hmm. What you gonna do?
This is your moment, mm-hmm. you right. know, go get your life, baby girl, go get your life. And I don't know what to comment, but I remember I used the word enunciate, like, just because you cannot enunciate a certain word, does not mean that you have to take it out on me, okay. or something, it was just, and it's just the hand thing I did, mm-hmm. I was like, no, and I remember I just poked her in a thing, and then it was like, everybody's like, ooh, ooh.
That's
and the
amazing.
Girl, it was so, and, like, and I guess she was so shocked that everybody had reacted, and mm-hmm. they, and after that, it was all good. And mm-hmm. that's when I learned, like, yeah, you don't have to fight, and you don't have to cut somebody down. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that girl, we're still friends now. Like, I'm, sure. like, godmother to her kids and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. we still talk about that time, but it was the art that you learned that you can undercut someone, but you can also build them back up.
True.
Like, look, you did me wrong, but you
well,
know what?
I'm well, let me tell you something really quick. I don't mean to take this off.
I love this. You would have
yeah.
been crying at that scene.
I would have been crying.
You would have cried at that scene in
Probably.
A movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's your sweet spot.
But here's a
and
trip.
I would have cried when they became friends again.
Okay.
But here's the trip in that is in that same story. So it was one of those things where you said, like, they would knock things out
right.
of your hand. He would, for years, this went on. From like 7 till 11, maybe, mm-hmm. you know? And so by the time I started doing martial arts when I was about 10 or 11, he came and popped me in my ear. You know, many people always pop you in
yes.
the ear. And he popped me in my ear, and I turned around and I put my foot against the throat and slammed him against the wall.
And changed
his
life.
In front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it all happened. And so mm-hmm. that's why I have this thing about, don't fucking just tell your kids, oh, well, be careful and yada yada. Fucking teach them to fight. Mm. You know what I mean? That's like my thing. Mm. And I know it's not the right thing to do. And I don't, you know, condone anybody to put their hands on anybody. But motherfucker, you need to learn how to fight too. That's mm-hmm. my thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, it worked for you. It was
it did.
Like, it
yeah.
was
it
like
did.
Your lifeline.
It right. did. And I always jokingly say, yeah, I'm a gay dude, but I'm the type of dude, you got to look past my tight shirts. I'm not the
okay.
dude you want to fuck with. You know what I mean? Plus, I got that hood in me, too.
Okay.
I will fuck you up.
Right.
I'm the sweetest guy that I will seriously go in. And I know how to fuck
you. Have you ever gotten into a major fight?
No.
Okay.
No.
I've never had to. Well, I did beat up. Well, I take that back. I beat up a couple of boys that just got out of line, but for other people. It wasn't like I was beating up because of me.
I love when a girl beats up a dude.
But it was like, no, it was for
somebody
other,
else.
No, it was for somebody else. Because it's like, a lot of times I'm that person that I can take a lot, and I usually take on a lot of stuff, like in family and friends. Like, I'm the one that's like, okay, I'll bear the brunt of whatever. Mm-hmm. But when I see other people who can't stand up for themselves, I'm that mm-hmm. one that's going to go and like, what are you doing?
Sure.
You know, without even thinking about, oh man, they might mess me up. Mm-hmm. And so there was, yeah, his name was Michael. Hello, Michael.
Big fan of podcasts.
And he had the best handwriting in mm-hmm. the world, okay, but he said something.
Now you're speaking my language.
I know, he had the best, and I was like, wow, what great, I mean, he had the best, like it was
perfect
a girl ride. It was perfect. And I used to sit next to him like, God, I hate this
that's
dude.
That's turning me on.
God, it's, I wonder who he is now. But yeah, he said something to my friend, Rolita Knows, I remember her name, Navajo girl. Mm-hmm. And he kept teasing her, you're a Mexican. She's like, I am Navajo. I am Native. I am this. And he was like pulling her, doing, he was just doing rude stuff. And finally, mm-hmm. She just started crying, and mm-hmm. I just couldn't take it anymore. And mm-hmm. I whipped his ass.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Diego.
Oh, because I grew up in Arizona. Our school was like a third Navajo.
Yeah, it was I had a very, very diverse neighborhood. I think that's why it was really difficult making the transition to junior high, where it was like tracking school system and like, mm-hmm. you know, school within the school. And it's like, I didn't see any other people of color. Mm-hmm. None of my gay friends, like everybody was gone. It's mm-hmm. like, what is my world coming to? You know, but it was, when that moment happened, I remember I just whooped his ass. And after that, I didn't have any problems in grade school after that. And that reputation kind of followed
me. That's kind of what I'm saying. And that doesn't mean to touch anybody. All I'm saying is sometimes when you stand up to a mother,
it takes one time. And yes. I think after that, I still carry it with me. Like mm-hmm. there are times when I walk around with people know, like, I'm the friendliest person in the world.
Me too.
I'm a fool, uh-huh. right? And people love my energy, love having me around.
Exactly.
But there is that undercurrent deep down, mm-hmm. like, you don't want to test me.
Then it's looking at it like, ooh, these ghetto motherfuckers.
It's not even ghetto. I'm a total Valley girl. But there is that element where, you know, at any moment, you mm-hmm. know, if stuff pops, like people know not to, like there's that fine line like, oh, she's cool. But there's something in there that mm-hmm. if this doesn't go well, that other side's going to come out. I'm not saying I'm the Incredible Hulk. But it will come out.
She's Lou Ferrigno, at least during the day.
I like that. I think it's cool.
And I think that carries over in the writing. And I think that's why when we talk about being bullied and things like that, mm-hmm. a lot of times when people who are artists, mm-hmm. I think that's why when you look at the history of writers and painters and dancers and singers, when you talk about their past, a lot of it comes from being picked on mm-hmm. or them internalizing and having this talent. And they're looking for acceptance in some way. They flourish in these talent, mm-hmm. you know, and they use a lot of that stuff. Comedians do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just something. So whenever I hear about people who were bullied or picked on, you know, there's a little artist in there somewhere deep down. And it's going to come out in whatever you do, yeah. you know.
Well,
anyway, not to go off on a tangent.
I like that.
Nice little sidebar.
That's good.
But I am so excited that your life is a sound. I mean, seriously, I would watch you in a movie.
Oh, God.
With that story, with the cruise ship and all the exciting stuff. Like, God, I can see each chapter. And mm-hmm. like, who is not optioned this? What is going on?
We'll see what this company says, right?
Well, the escapade, I just sent it to a producer that could really do something with it. So I mm-hmm. really hope they like it. Okay. Send Happy Juju on that little project.
Everybody on three, Juju.
Yes. So we'll see. Yeah. That's a ton of fun. You know what else makes me cry on a totally random subject?
What's it?
When the president or first lady say gay stuff, or like when they include us,
right.
instantly.
Right. Or if you're watching
works.
The Oscars right. and somebody says right. my partner
right.
or something to that.
Yeah,
right.
but for yeah. some, for me, it's like the president, the first lady, or even the vice president.
Okay.
I'm in the car and they're like, no matter who you love, I'm like, what?
I know.
Instantly.
And for people who've had like the privilege of always being the center of something, mm-hmm. when you feel like you're included in, it's a big deal.
Big deal.
It's a big thing. And big a lot deal. Of people are like, oh, why are people... It means something. Mm-hmm. It means you're part of the fabric of this country and that, mm-hmm. that you are a fully realized human being like everybody else. Like
when Common and him won the Oscar, and Common did that speech and he did the thing and he was talking mainly about black people, but then mm-hmm. he started talking about everybody,
right.
no matter who you are. And I
right.
was like...
Right.
Who you right. love. I'm out. I'm out.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, right. that was a total side note.
So then you started, so you were talking about your writing.
Yes.
So how did you end up
that
writing
transition from writing?
Well,
to film
when magazines started drying up, I was like, okay.
What am I going to do?
Yeah. And I'm back there, funny enough. But anyway, I got my first television writing job on a show called Love Spring International.
And how did that come about?
Well, I had been collaborating previously with Guy Shalem, who was one of the co-creators of it. We mm-hmm. developed some stuff on our own and things like that. And so I think they did 6 episodes, and they were able to bring on a few more people, a couple other writers. And so I met and pitched stories, and I got the gig. And that's what got me in the Writers Guild.
Okay.
And that was a show on Lifetime. It was mostly improvised, and we'd write out beat sheets and outlines and... Mm. But it was Jane Lynch, Wendy McLennan Covey, Sam Pancake, Jack Plotnick, Jennifer Koss.
Some good names.
Oh my God, some great names.
Great. So that was only, ran the 13 episodes, mm-hmm. but it was my first TV job, and it got me in the Guild, and that was cool.
It's important.
And then I was doing a radio show, kind of was my main job, called Radio with a Twist, which was a gay radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And then that ended, and I...
He always has his good titles, doesn't he?
I know, right?
Yeah,
but I didn't make it up.
It really sets the tone. You really tell the tone.
I know exactly what I'm
saying. Exactly.
All right, that's good.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a job writing on the Big Gay Sketch Show, which was a sketch comedy show on Logo. Okay. I got to go to New York.
Yeah.
And Kate McKinnon was on it, and mm-hmm. really talented mm-hmm. people. And that was 3 months. And then I came back, and that's when things really dried up. And I was like, oh, boy.
Well, let's talk about that. Man. How do you survive that?
I don't know, because I'm kind of back there in a way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know.
Well, the reason I asked
I try
because...
to write. I try to write my way out of it.
Sure.
And you got to have faith, and you've got to...
Well, let me
sometimes
just say this.
When you, one thought I want to say.
Go ahead.
Sometimes when you're reaching out trying to make something happen, mm-hmm. when you're not feeling like when you're feeling like a loser, mm-hmm. it's hard to you don't always reach out, or you send one email, but you maybe you should follow up, but you feel like a loser, and
right.
then you
oh, yeah.
do,
We've
and they're
all
like,
been
I'm so
there.
Glad you emailed right. me. Your other right. one went to spam.
Right.
A lot of times, I don't know. Sometimes the way you feel colors the way you.
Right.
You reach out, mm-hmm. or sometimes I do that thing where if I get a little win somewhere, I'm like, all right, I'm going to email all those other people while I'm right. going to ride this little win.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's, you know, it's tough.
Well, the reason I'm asking is, and we talk about this a lot on my show, because we have staff writers on, we have showrunners on, and I'm always curious with the people who are like staff writers or who have been staff writers several times, like you have. Trying to get that next job, people always, because a lot of younger writers think, oh, I just want to get on staff.
Right.
It's like, yeah, motherfucker, 13, you know, episodes, 20 right. weeks, then what?
Right.
Yeah. So I just listened to the interview with the woman that was on, yeah, mm-hmm. Army Wives, mm-hmm. and that story. It's a very familiar story.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And my thing is, I don't have reps.
Okay.
I've tried. Still. I know. Can you believe it?
He just came out of one of the biggest
writers,
programs.
The Writer's Access Project.
Right.
I got into that
at the Writer's Guild.
Okay.
And still.
And I worked that thing to the ground. I worked my network so hard.
Because I saw you sent out an email going, hey,
right,
everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. All of that. Like, mm-hmm. I, you know, and I thought I'd hit the right note. And, mm-hmm. you know, the producer that's looking at Escapade now is something that came out of that. But okay. very, you know, they do a big... The Writers Access Project is a program that the Writers Guild started to try to make writers' rooms more diverse. Mm-hmm. I tick the gay box. Mm-hmm. Big surprise.
And are you gay?
I know, right? And you know what? I want you to get your take on this. And I felt sure. a little guilty about it because I'm like a white dude, you know.
You said I'm
age.
Like a white dude.
It is diversity.
Yeah.
But you know what? And I felt a little guilty about it, but I do think it's a thing. I do think it's a wall sometimes.
Yes.
And not necessarily from people that are homophobic or anything like that, but I tend to write about my life and things I observe, and mm-hmm. maybe people don't see that short film that was in Outfit. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure,
so I think
sure.
I'm fine being in the diverse mm-hmm. thing. I think it is a thing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, if you need to get in that way, you need to get in that way. Because believe me, we talk about diversity a lot if you listen to our shows.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
A ton. And I used to have issues with being called a diverse writer because I don't feel that I'm a diverse writer in the sense of don't just put me in that category. However, motherfucker, if I get in the door,
I am taking every category
like,
you got.
Oh yeah, yes sir. That's how I am, sir.
It's way harder. You have to. It's way harder than I thought it all would be, and it feels like it's getting harder. But I don't know. So you have to take every opportunity you can get. But it was a great program. We had. Glenn Mazzara spearheaded the seminar series mm-hmm. with Leo Chu and Aaron Garcia, who are a team. And there were 5 nights where they didn't talk about craft. They assumed that if you got in, you
already know.
You
could
know
write.
Some shit, yeah.
Sure.
And the cool thing was there were 2 rounds, and the second round, they gave your script to 3 showrunners, and they said, would you hire this person based on the script?
Really? Okay.
And if you got 2 out of the 3, you got in.
Wow.
And so they weren't going to like fill 20 slots or 10 slots. It's however many past that
right.
thing. And there were 11.
What did you submit for that? Do you remember?
I submitted my pilot for Misadventures in the 213, which is my book.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened was in 1998, 99, when that came out, it got a lot of buzz. It was mm-hmm. on the LA Times bestseller list. People really liked that book. I was really proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 2 separate TV deals for it. And I was like, I'm on my way.
Yes.
I'm on my way. Here we go.
We're moving on.
Although, you know what? Even looking back, I was like, I'd been around enough to know, like, you know, don't. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, like, shopping for houses with pools or anything like that. But both of them kind of fell apart.
Okay.
And I let it go and kind of moved on. But it was that thing that I never realized. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you ever make that a TV show? Why isn't that a, you know?
Right.
And I was like, it felt like that unfinished business to me.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2010, I got a job on Fashion Police. Mm-hmm. I was one of the writers on Fashion Police mm-hmm. that went on strike. Mm-hmm. And in 2013, we went on strike. Mm-hmm. And I met a woman through the strike who had sort of reached out to us. She's a member of the Writers Guild. Well,
can you back up and tell the people about the strike? What do you mean?
Yeah,
you mean the show went on strike?
The writers on Fashion Police went on strike.
Oh, okay.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, yeah. It was intense, man. Because there were two staff writers, two people on staff. Mm-hmm. When I was brought on, I was on staff. But I was doing the script coordination and some writing. But then we realized, oh, Joan's going to be telling a million jokes. It mm-hmm. became a real, much more intense writing job than mm-hmm. I thought. I thought it was sort of a producing job. And there were two of us on staff, and then the show went to an hour, and there were always some freelancers, but then there became a lot more freelancers, and they were wanting a ton of jokes. So mm-hmm. Chelsea Lately and The Soup, which are also on E, mm-hmm. Organized and were able to get guild contracts. And we tried to get in with them, mm-hmm. too, but we didn't succeed.
Okay.
And one of the big differences is Chelsea Handler and Joel McHale both supported their writers, and we never got Joan Rivers on board with us. Mm.
And she is Guild, right?
Yeah, she was Writers Guild East. So it was weird. That was really hard.
She's a writer, too. It's like,
I know, I'm always tripping
on
that.
It was really weird.
You know?
And so we let it go for a while, and then the show went to an hour, and there were all these freelancers coming in. We were writing a million jokes, mm-hmm. and we got together at the Guild, and I was in a tough spot because I was on staff. I worked with the producers, and I was really part of the family, mm-hmm. and that job saved my life. It came along at a time mm-hmm. when I was, like, on the edge. Mm-hmm. So everyone was sort of talking about their workload and what they do, and I didn't know how little they were getting paid.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of the freelancers were getting paid like $610 a week,
really?
And or something like that, $600 a week, and working like 30 hours because mm-hmm. they wanted so many jokes.
Now, let me just preface this for you guys. Disclaimer, for those people who don't know, all he's saying is it's not your union weekly fee.
Yeah.
It's way low. I know. A lot of people are like, wow, I'd love to make $600 a week. No, motherfucker, it's not union. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Well, it works out for the amount of time that the people were spending. Because everyone knew how hard it was to write all those jokes, but because we did it separately, you just sort of assumed, oh, I must be slow and everyone else must just be fast. Right. And then when we all started opening up, it was like a coming out process. And they're like, no, I stay up all night. You know, like, it was intense. Mm. And so it worked out that they were sort of getting like $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not right.
Right.
For an international hit television right. show. Mm-hmm. So that's why I had to stand with them. So mm-hmm. I was in a position of where I had to sort of choose between my job and my profession.
Wow.
And
wow.
I picked my profession. And it was intense, wow. man.
Because that means you go up against your producers.
Yeah,
who I loved, yes. you know? And
that's hard to be in
it. It was hard. Mm. And it's still like, this thing that was like an intense thing. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't have lived with myself if I'd stayed. A, I would have probably lost my guild membership, mm-hmm. which means a lot to me.
Right.
And it was just wrong. Mm-hmm. I would have felt like I pussied out, right? I was fearful. But anyway, a woman that I met through the strike, she and her husband were going to have us over just to get to know the Fashion Police writers. So I brought a copy of my book as a thank you gift. And mm-hmm. also like, maybe they'll read it and think I'm talented.
Smart move.
I mean,
yeah,
you know what
move.
I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
yes, I'm, you know, and whatever. And she read it right away and we had lunch and she goes, this is a TV show. And why don't you write this as a TV show? And I said, well, I tried and I couldn't crack it, and we had those deals, and I kind of did my whole song, and it was just so stymied.
You just sold yourself down to
it. Well, I was sort of like, I'm just so stymied by it. She goes, well, just start at the beginning and write it like that.
Mm.
I said, oh, I can do that?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, yeah, just start at the beginning mm-hmm. of the book. Okay. And then she goes, and I'll help you.
Oh, wow.
And I did, and then she didn't, but that's okay.
She primed the pump and got it going.
This is so, I don't know what this is indicative of, but she planted the seed that made me do it. And
yeah, somebody needed to do that.
Right.
Yes.
Who validated you?
I'm very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. But I emailed her, I'm like, I did it, and here it is. And she was like, I'm sure it's great. I'm a little overwhelmed right now, but you're in good hands. And I'm like, no, there's no hands. Whose hands am I in? I'm not in any hands.
Exactly.
But,
that's hilarious.
You know, in the wake of the strike, I became aware of the Writers Access Project. Mm-hmm. And because I had been working on the mm-hmm. script, mm-hmm. I had something to submit that I felt good about. and it got me in there. And that was really thrilling. We mm-hmm. learned so much. I mean, mm-hmm. Glenn Mazzara and Leo mm-hmm. and Eric, amazing. Mm-hmm. And the thing, the seminars weren't about craft. They were about how to navigate the business. Mm-hmm. How to, when you go into a room and they say, tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what to say. Mm-hmm. You're not just like, it seems like so obvious now, but it was like, oh no, those are amazing skills to mm-hmm. have.
And right.
They were fantastic. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the people in the group were super great. And
oh, speaking of that, yeah. I met a girl the other day, an older woman, short hair.
Karen?
She's a military. Karen.
Karen Strunk.
Karen, yeah.
Yeah,
super I met her
great.
The other day.
Yeah.
I hooked her up because she's a vet. Mm-hmm. And I hooked her up with them. I think her children's writing that script with Tracy Gamble.
Yes.
He's a showrunner. Mm-hmm. And so he's a former vet too. And I'm trying to get him back to yeah. doing things at the guild. So I connected them too. To meet.
That's awesome. So and I think she does, I think she organizes that group for veteran writers, yeah. like that workshop.
That's what I'm trying to connect mm-hmm. to. So, yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. They were it's all great resource, and really yeah. cool. And mm-hmm. there was only two comedy guys, me and a guy named Chuck Hayward. You know Chuck? African American.
Chuck, yes. Don't you know Chuck, Chuck. OBS Don't. Member.
Oh, is that who that is?
Chuck, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He was the other comedy guy in there.
All right.
Yeah, super nice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but. And one of the coolest things that came out of it is the group. You know, we've gotten mm-hmm. together a couple times since then, and mm-hmm. you know, it was neat.
I think that's important. You got to have that camaraderie, if right. you will, because we've been in some programs before too. So you still have those people in your group, mm-hmm. you know, who you still are close to.
Yeah.
If know. I were going to give advice to young people, it's like make friends, be there for your friends, mm-hmm. read your friends' stuff, show up for people, build a community. Because mm-hmm. I think. Somebody on your level is more likely to catch a break and bring you with them
right.
than somebody
the
above
point.
You is
right.
going to come down and go, right. you.
Your
right.
friends are the ones who are going to hire you.
And, yes.
yep.
Like perfect example. You were just talking about the woman who said she would help you with the
yes.
script. Now, she encouraged you to get started. You got started. Now,
yes.
you thought, this is the one who's going to help me get the script
right.
to TV.
Right.
Now,
or something.
Or something, right. right? Maybe she'll help me get an agent, whatever yeah. the fuck.
Whatever the fuck.
And right. I always say, and Lisa, we always say, the person who's going to help you is not the person you think is going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we all have that one big producer friend or director friend who we think is going to help us.
Right.
Nope, not that motherfucker.
That is not how it's going to work.
Somebody else.
It's really.
It's going to be somebody else.
It's really weird. I'm working on a feature now, a script. I co-wrote a feature film called Testosterone with David Morton, the mm-hmm. director. It came mm-hmm. out in 2003. Mm-hmm. Antonio Sabato Jr., Sonia
okay.
Braga.
That's not bad.
Come on, you got Sonia Braga.
Did he have a shirt off in that one?
You got Sonia Braga?
He went full frontal.
Right?
Yes, Antonio served up full frontal.
Really?
Yes.
It's called what?
It's called Testosterone. I haven't watched it in a long time, and I'm very curious to look and see. But I got to go to Argentina and work on it. I got to, you know, it was a feature.
Mm-hmm.
And I've reconnected with the director of that, David Morton, and we're working on a new script for
Good.
That. But it's about a writer who does something kind of drastic to mm-hmm. try to change the game.
Okay.
He tells a lie, mm-hmm. you know, but it changes everything for him. I don't want to go into too
much,
but I'm using all of this stuff
okay.
somewhere. Yeah, it may mm-hmm. be people may read it and think, gosh, that's too inside. Who cares about that? But it's good therapy.
There have been tons of movies
stuff.
That have been inside
yes.
That,
yes.
that worked.
So we'll see.
Know?
But mm-hmm. yeah,
let's talk about just a little bit before we wrap up. Let's talk about your we can't miss the theater stuff you do
yes.
and the thing the show you host all the time
the mismatch game at the Gay
yeah.
and Lesbian
Center.
Let's talk
Center.
About that. We do it.
Game.
Yeah, it's like the old Match Game.
Yeah,
remember that? We've been doing it for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. I host and produce it, and we have different comics come and play celebrities, and we do it like two or three times a year, mm-hmm. and it's filthy. I
That's
can't
hilarious.
Believe they let us
it's
do
all
it.
Improv,
my
pretty much,
of.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, yeah, they're all, I never know what they're going to say. And I can't believe
That's
they
the
let
best.
Us.
Because they played
do
them
it.
As the
best.
Character
yes.
answering the question. So
That's
it's hilarious.
The best.
And mm-hmm. yeah, it's cool. And to date, we've made, you know, $115,000 for the
wow.
center. That feels good, right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
it's fun. It's like a few times a year we do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do it again at the end of August.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's not bad. That's
it's
not bad.
Filthy and I love it.
So what else is next?
Well, I'm hoping that somebody likes this this escapade cruise ship thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get misadventures out there. You know, mm-hmm. I thought with the guild, it's so funny. Right? Did you get you got that email from me with like these are my goals, right? I want
I always read them too.
I know you're very thoughtful.
Yeah.
And like none of them.
Because I might get something out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my thing.
No, you're such a supportive person. Yeah. You're even I don't see you that much, but you're always like rooting for each other. I remember going to the screening of your mm-hmm. short, mm-hmm. Troublesome. I still mm-hmm. love that title. Mm-hmm. And like you're just a champion for people.
Yeah,
and
I try
that
to
is
be.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm.
I try to be because
even when I see you at the Guild, you're always like, you have a great energy.
Thank you. Thank you.
So
I try to be consistent. We talked about consistency
right.
is important.
Right.
You know, so the person you see today is the person you'll see tomorrow, mm-hmm. you'll see me next week. Mm-hmm. I try not to be moody. Mm-hmm. I try not to be something different, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Right.
speaking of that, like your friend Karen, she ain't even called a brother.
She hasn't called
no.
you? All right.
I reached out to her. She didn't call nobody back.
You're in good hands. You're in good hands.
Tell the hell.
Do you have her email? You have her email address, right?
I emailed her.
Okay, mm-hmm. good.
I emailed her and connected them and said, hey, girl, reach out to me. You know what I mean?
Miss Kay, you better get to him. His feelings are
I think she
hurt.
Got a manager out of the Writers Access Project.
Yeah,
I think
she told me that.
A yeah. few people did, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, they told us that, like, the world wasn't going to come flying open. I mean, they said in their experience, you know,
mm-hmm.
a few things happen and mm-hmm. da 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 da. But it, you know, they put out this big press release, and I think they didn't want us all
you.
Sitting by the phone going,
like,
"Here we go."
Here we go.
But let me ask you. I mean, because I always tell people, because I'm always giving people game on, like, okay, if you get into this program or this program, this you should be able to pick up the phone and go, "Hey, I'm in this program. Will you take a look at this?" Have you been able to do that at all?
Well, there are a lot of people that I've been able to use my network.
Mm-hmm.
People in my network were more comfortable sending it to somebody, sending mm-hmm. it to an agent.
Okay.
And there's a few of those out there, seeds that are planted, and mm-hmm. I try to follow up, but nothing's bloomed yet.
Okay.
But, you know, there was one, we had an agents and managers night, and there
mm-hmm.
was a CAA agent that came.
Mm-hmm.
And a younger one, kind of newer.
That's what you want.
Yeah, no, perfect.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And
exactly.
This is such a perfect example. Like when the CAA, UTA, or the eight, mm-hmm. when all that stuff went down, I looked and saw who got promoted, and
mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, I'm going to send them a congratulations email, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there were like two or three people in TV that had gotten promoted in my area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to write this congratulatory email, and I got to do this program. You know, you know, the way you write those emails and you parse every word and
yes.
you work it so
mm-hmm.
fucking hard.
Yes.
It's just like, oh gosh, I am finessing my ass off.
Okay.
And so I send it to these three people, one of whom I had come to the panel, so
mm-hmm.
I had familiarity with.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, boom, comes back this like this CIA thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't accept unsolicited
really?
Thing. That's sort of like
mm-hmm.
like a brick wall
mm-hmm.
coming through your email. And I was like, oh, that it feels crummy.
Mm-hmm.
Like you feel stupid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, that
wait,
was a waste.
But did you send a hard copy one maybe? Because they ain't got that. You can put it on the mail and put it in old school.
Go, maybe kick it old school. But, you know, I was like, wah, wah. But then that night, the one, somehow I got through the firewall to the one that had come to the panel.
Oh,
and
really?
She said she's, you know, up to her neck in staffing season.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hit me up in a few weeks and I'll read it. So that's one of those
yeah.
things where you sometimes you're like, I can't write another email.
Yes.
I can't reach out to them
I
again. I'm such a
court.
Pest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they're like, you know, oh, it went into my spam folder or whatever. So it's still hard, though, to work it. Sometimes you're like,
I mean, I think you're doing all the right things. I mean,
yeah.
it's kind of like what the lady said. Oh, you're doing the right thing.
You're in good hands.
You're in good hands. But,
yeah, but
I mean, it's like people always ask me, and I've had such good luck winning and placing in some of the big competitions.
Right.
So people are always like, well, are you still doing them? I'm like, no. Because you kind of hit that wall at some point. It's like, well, I can't submit that script anymore. I can't submit that one. Okay,
right.
I wrote this new one. It doesn't really fit good with the way that they, you know, you start playing that game and I start going, I don't think I'm going to submit anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and I'm still working. I'm still making
right.
a good living doing what I'm doing.
Right.
So it's like, there's no need to go that route. But
right.
I also
you've
feel
done,
the same way.
Yeah.
I feel the same way that you do. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little surprised that you're actually having a hard time finding an agent because I know your voice and I know your voice is so.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's so unique.
I appreciate
no,
that.
No, I mean, you can hear.
It's an
even if you watch.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you and Glenn the Gaylord.
Yeah.
You have a very, very different voice to me. The way you write. You can see the humor. It's on the page. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
just really, really brilliant. So I'm a little surprised in that sense. And then, so I don't know what it is that's not doing it. But I think it's just burning you to keep making more things, though. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and a lot of, like, this script, a lot of this stuff, this frustration is going into it, and it's, you know, I'm in a part of a writer's group, and people are like, wow, this is, they're feeling it. They're like, this is really compelling and real. I can't wait to, you know, finish it.
Right.
So you just got to, you know, I picked it. This is what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody put
it's
a gun
choice.
To my head.
Okay. It's a choice.
My problem is, though, is, you know, that when you end the question, well, if this doesn't work out, I can always go, I don't know what goes in the blank.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I did. It's not like, oh, it's show business or die, or, you know, or bust. I would do something else.
Well, I'm going through this phase now where I'm getting so many producing gigs because I'm a really good producer. And I mean only in the sense I'm really good at putting teams together. And say you have $50,000 budget, we'll get everything for $25,000.
I just know
how to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to go, I love my writing. Maybe I'm supposed to. I mean, that's what I did when I was an actor since I was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped because I was like, maybe I'm supposed to write, you know? And now I'm starting to go, maybe I'm supposed to produce, you know? Because that's what keeps coming to me, you know?
Yeah, I think there's no. I think I used to have this idea that, like, you've got to stick to your one thing and present that thing. And now it's like, do what comes your way. And
all of it.
Open up.
Go where the love is.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely. You cannot put me in a box right now.
Yeah, and if you do this, it doesn't mean you don't do that. It doesn't mean you're not a good writer if you do something else. Or
exactly.
I think all bets are off. It's like you just got to do whatever.
Get in where you fit in.
Get in where you fit in.
So let's give the kids just a little bit. Give them another big word of advice for people who are like in our situations where you are stuck between something, trying to get out of it. You're on the right track earlier. Give me a little bit more of that.
I think I get a lot of joy from supporting my fellow artists. I do a podcast called Dennis Anyone where I talk to creative people, and I just find it so. I just feel like I'm doing the right thing when I'm doing that. Like, I just
listened to your one with Howard Score, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It was so fun. And I always feel good when I do it. And, like, I feel like it's gotten harder to make a living doing this thing, but easier to get stuff out there, whether it's on digital or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I like going to see shows that my friends do. I like being part of that struggler community. And I get a lot of... I don't know. I get a lot of gas in my tank from that. I also think it's a good strategic thing to build a community because that's what it is. It's the people you know and the people that you've worked with before and, you know.
By the way, you need to get more involved at the Writers Guild.
All right. I know. I feel
a little
guilty about that.
You do. I'm on three committees. I've been on for years. So you need to get more involved in the committees. We got an LGBT committee you should be on, for God's sake.
All right. I will do that. I will take up that challenge. Well, it's just nice. You know, when we had the Writers Access Project, it was nice to go there for a reason that wasn't the strike. Because we would have all our strike meetings there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they got us food, but it was still... it was gnarly. It was...
Understood.
I there's so many cookies from Corner Bakery that can make up for the stress of that situation.
Well, what reminded me of it was on Linnell's episode. Shout out to Linnell White.
I love that episode, by the way.
On Linnell's episode, it was a great episode. On Linnell's episode, she was talking about being in the women's committee group at the Writers Guild, sitting next to this particular writer, you know, every 2 months, and didn't even realize this person has been watching them. You know, and they're like, hey, send me something. She'd even never read her before.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's what I'm talking about, the access you have to certain people, you know, being around these certain places. I'm on the education committee, which has some of the most powerful writers in the guild. You know, I'm sitting right next to them. They know what I do. They know who I am. Everybody listens to the show. Everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It's awesome.
So.
Well, it's interesting. When I finished Fashion Police, I did a show running job on the show called Breakdown on Bounce TV.
What was that like?
It was a young hip hop flavored, the African American cast, all in their like 20s, super talented. And they were, you know, taking this web property and making it into a television show. And I interviewed for it and I got the job.
Wow.
And I felt like, what am I doing? You know, but they needed somebody that knew how to put a TV right. show together.
How big right. was your staff? I mean, your writer's room, how big was it?
That was like, the two hosts were mm-hmm. also contributing as writers, okay. and there were two other people that were brought in.
Okay.
But we were really finding the show on its way. It was really low budget. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally, during tapings, I would do the clap report. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
But it was a really good experience, right. but it was like culturally really interesting for mm-hmm. me, because... you know, there were a lot of references that I didn't know mm-hmm. and a lot of issues that I didn't mm-hmm. know. I mispronounced Tupac.
What did you call
him?
Did you say Tupac?
Tell me
yes!
you did that.
Tell me. I feel close enough to just tell you that. It was early on.
Just tell me you didn't spell it wrong.
No, I probably did.
Oh, thank God.
I didn't do that.
Thank God.
But, you know, but they had this great energy. They were super talented, those kids. And I learned a ton from it, but it kicked my ass as a job. It was, you know, they were trying to do a TV show on a digital budget, but
yeah.
I got to have showrunner on my door, hey, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting culturally. And I think by the end of it, I'd really earned the respect, and there was a lot of affection between, the staff and the hosts and, okay. and me. And it was a great group. And so,
how many episodes did you guys do that?
We did like 12.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Not bad.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a season.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Season. Yeah.
It was intense.
So where can people find you at? Where are you at?
DennisHensley.com or DennisAnyone.net is my podcast. You can mm-hmm. subscribe to that on iTunes.
Another great title.
Dennis Anyone. I've had some great writers on there, Ron, mm-hmm. like Ron Nyswaner, mm-hmm. I got to talk to, mm-hmm. and Jonathan Tolens, who wrote Byron Seller. Did you see that play?
Yeah.
He had this great quote about living in LA. He moved out. He lives in Connecticut now. Mm-hmm. And he said that, you know, when you're trying to make stuff happen and other people are succeeding or whatever, he goes, it's like being in a casino and pulling on the slot
yes.
machine and everyone's
Everybody
winning.
Else is
that's
cling,
true.
Cling, cling. Yes.
That's exactly
and
what
then
it's
he goes,
like.
You know, sometimes you got to get out of the casino.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Sometimes you do got to get out of the casino.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, my podcast, ebook that's out now, Mariners Club Mixtape, mm-hmm. is on Kindle and Amazon.
I'm
going to
get that. I'm going
to
get that.
$2.99. It's fun.
Hey,
I can send it to you.
Okay.
I'd be honored to send
steal.
It to you. And, you know, my books are still out there, and mm-hmm. I'm just doing my thing.
Are you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah. Hensley Dennis.
Hensley Dennis.
At Hensley Dennis.
All right. That's
yeah.
what's up. Thank you, man. We appreciate having
so
you.
This was so fun. Thank you
thank
for
you.
Having me. You guys are awesome.
Well,
thank
I'm
you.
Expecting a TV show from your work pretty soon.
Oh, from your mouth. I would
am.
Love that.
I'm here waiting to binge watch right now. Like,
right? You would
ready.
Watch a show about dancers on a cruise
yes,
ship, wouldn't
I
you?
Would.
Yeah.
Yes, I would. Yes.
The funny thing is I prepared this video. I have all these old videos, kind of like the Goldbergs, mm-hmm. you know, where he has I have all the videos of like stuff. I have like footage from the galley where the chef is making croissants without a shirt on. He's got
really?
His big belly out.
That's
and I put
hilarious.
That's right in the pilot. Like things that are like, that really happened? And I was
yes.
like, yeah, let's yes. get
it. Insider stuff.
Yes. Yeah, that's hopefully. Good. Hopefully it has that perspective of like, oh, wow, that feels so specific and
yes.
weird. It must
mm-hmm.
be true.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Where are you at, Lisa? Lisa Cole Jam.
You can find me on Twitter, and mm-hmm. you can also find me on Bitchflix. So those
Bitchflix.
Two places. Bitchflix, where it's a website where we do film reviews with a feminist intersectional perspective. So
what you know about feminists.
Feminists, yes. And I'll be over at if you're ever in Madison, Wisconsin next week, you can see me over at WisCon. I'll be doing a reading and probably be in a couple of panels talking about science fiction and fantasy and all kinds of cool stuff. So hit me up on Twitter and check me out on Bitchflix. I got to catch up on some writing, some reviews. So look for me there. I don't know why I'm whispering. Hello, people.
I have no idea.
Hello, people.
She's crazy, y'all. That's why.
I think I'm excited because I'm about to go see the new Mad Max movie.
I know. I'm going tonight. I'm going
they don't
to,
know the
Academy.
People, hey, I'm letting people, whatever theater I go to, just know in the lobby, I'm taking the Tom Hardy poster home with me.
Do you love him?
I love him.
I kind of love him, too.
I love him. And no one
and he's
say bad
different
thing.
In every movie.
He
looks different.
He looks different. He's just a wonderful actor
yeah. mm-hmm.
who just happens to be really, really good looking. And he has fabulous lips. And Tom Hardy, please don't wear a beard anymore because it covers up your lips. And we need
yeah.
to see your lip game is on point. Okay? So get away from those scraggly beards.
Exactly. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. and you guys can find me on Twitter. Shut up, Lisa. @HilliardGuess. Or you can follow us on the show @ScreenwritersRR If you have any questions for us, we want to send us anything, screenwritersrr. I just said that, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Screenwritersrantroom at gmail.com.
Have another cookie.
I know. The girl, I had like sleep apnea last night. I could not sleep.
I swear I got
20 so minutes.
I barely slept at all, and here we are.
So a little shout out to a couple of our top countries that are following us. We really appreciate it. Please, you guys, give us a 5-star review. We need that for The Matrix. Of course, United Kingdom, you guys are killing. They're number 2.
UK.
Canada, Brazil, Germany, Australia, France, Japan, India, Serbia, Singapore.
I'm huge in Serbia, by the way.
Yeah, we are too. Norway, the Cayman Islands, Mexico, Jamaica. And I'm going to stop there because I can just keep going.
That's amazing.
We're in like 90 countries. It's like crazy. So with that, y'all know what to do.
Do we?
On this show.
Yeah.
We keep it street. Mm-hmm. We keep it opinionated.
What?
And we keep it what? 2015. Yeah.
Thank you.
Everyone got one. What's your opinion? This is the rare room. Tongues won't be bitten. Ain't no rules, just spill it. And anybody can get it. No limit. We get to kill it. You tuning into the thrillers. And no, ain't no stopping. Any topic, even the random. We get to win. I hope that you're ready. We entering in the zone soon. We only grown shit. Welcome to the rare room.